likely to find that Vance and the Carter administration, again following the lead of Kissinger and the Ford administration, perceive the key obstacle to a settlement no longer as the question of Arabs refusing to grant Israel the right to exist. Instead, the crux of the problem is being defined in terms of the 17-year-old dilemma of the Palestinians, how to devise a formula in which the legitimate interests of the Palestinians can be preserved side by side with the integrity of Israel. In a recent interview with the New York Times, Vance noted that the Palestinians have begun to show signs of moderating their position, that their own rights of nationhood demand Israel's destruction. Vance said, "Such moderation would be a helpful step, if true. On paper, therefore, there appears to be an unprecedented degree of flexibility among Arab leaders, who have advertised their willingness to negotiate in a sustained peace offensive which has kept the Israelis off balance diplomatically, and has cast them in an uncomfortable posture of intransigence." Depending on his perspective, Vance is likely to find an accumulation of signals from Arab leaders indicating that the momentum toward a settlement is irresistible, and that the only missing ingredient is U.S. pressure to bring the Israelis to Geneva negotiations, emphasis supplied. The above Los Angeles Times report has been quoted simply to emphasize the point that, if the reader were not aware that the date of the report was February 14, 1977, it would read like yesterday's newspaper. Even in 1977, these issues, which grew out of the 1967 Six-Day War, had been festering for more than 10 years. They have now remained unresolved for more than 22 years. In a thoughtful and persuasive article appearing in the Los Angeles Times on March 9, 1977, Ira Handelman, a professor at the University of Southern California, and Yoav Peeld, an Israeli and a professor of political science at UCLA, addressed a plea to the American supporters of Israel, in particular the Jewish community, to recognize the new climate and operate opportunities for peace and to support the U.S. negotiating efforts. The article entitled "Time for an Eye Checkup Israel Watches" is set forth here in part. Momentum seems to be building for a peace settlement in the Middle East. Both the Arab nations and Israel have expressed a desire to reconvene the Geneva conference this year, as have the United States, the Soviet Union, and UN Secretary General Kurt Waldheim. However, a major stumbling block remains: the role of the Palestine Liberation Organization. The Arab states insist that the PLO must have a part in the peace conference, whether as an independent delegation, as part of a combined Palestinian-Jordanian group, or within a unified Arab mission. Israel, on the other hand, adamantly refuses to negotiate with the PLO, insisting that the Palestinian issue should be resolved through bilateral talks with Jordan. The only country capable of breaking this stalemate is the United States. While the Carter administration would like to see the talks resume after the Israeli elections in May, it still supports Israel's refusal to deal with the PLO unless the Palestinians modify their covenant constitution to recognize Israel's right to exist. Many observers now believe that the Palestinian National Council, when it meets this month, will attempt to accommodate the American demand. If that occurs, the United States might well abandon its opposition to PLO participation. But since the Israeli government is unlikely to go along, the result could be a confrontation between Jerusalem and Washington. Israel's American supporters could help to obviate such a confrontation, but to do so, many among them will have to overcome their preconceptions about the Middle East. For years, many of Israel's friends in this country, Jews and non-Jews alike, have entertained a simplistic black and white view of the Arab-Israeli conflict. In their minds, Israel was an almost perfect state, a close-knit democracy struggling for survival against overwhelming forces of darkness and barbarism. The Arabs, on the other hand, were perceived as a single-minded horde of 100 million, determined to destroy Israel and drive the Jews into the sea. Paradoxically, Israel, particularly after 1967, was thought to be militarily invincible, while the Arabs, though numerically superior, were portrayed as militarily incompetent pawns of the Soviet Union. Thus, for Americans sympathetic to Israel, taking a position on every issue connected with the conflict was easy. Whatever Israel did was right, whatever the Arabs did was wrong. More recently, the public perception of Israel has been shaken by revelations of internal dissension, acute social problems and corruption in high places. Americans whose support of Israel has been based on an idealized vision of the Jewish state can react to these developments in one of three ways. They can punish Israel for not living up to their fantasies by withholding their support, they can cling to the old myths and fight every differing viewpoint as anti-Zionist or anti-Semitic propaganda, or they can take a more realistic view of the Middle Eastern situation, and try to understand the legitimate fears, aspirations, and grievances of both sides. Clearly, the best interests of both the United States and Israel would be served by the latter response. One way to express this new view is to drop the simplistic notion that the PLO is nothing more than a gang of terrorist murderers. True, like other national liberation movements, the PLO has frequently resorted to violence, but, notwithstanding the reprehensible nature of some of its actions, it is a mistake to confuse the PLO's political ends with its violent means. The primary purpose of the terrorist acts was to bring the Palestinians' cause to world attention. Now that their position has been almost universally recognized, the PLO maintains offices in about 150 capitals. The number of violent incidents has drastically declined. American supporters of Israel who deny the reality of this development or belittle its significance are doing Israel a great disservice. In any future American-Israeli confrontation over PLO participation at Geneva, it would be impossible for Israel supporters to play a constructive role if they fail to recognize the changes that have occurred in PLO thinking since 1973. If pro-Israel groups in the United States fail to face up to this new reality, public debate and discussion will be left to the ideologists and extremists, emphasis supplied, the valuable advice given, and the wisdom shown in the foregoing article was ignored by the Israeli partisans in this country at a crucial time, when the course of Israel's foreign policy was about to undergo a radicalization with the election. Several months later, of the Likud party under the leadership of Menachem Begin. As Handelman and Peel predicted, the ideologists and extremists took over. In the spring of 1977, Israel was in the midst of a strongly contested election campaign between Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, of the Labour Party, and Menachem Begin, of the Likud. Prime Minister Rabin was eager to meet the new US president. A report on Prime Minister Rabin's meeting with President Carter was carried in the Los Angeles Times of March 8, 1977, a portion of which is set out below. Rabin reaffirms desire for peace on Israel's terms. Washington Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, apparently buoyed by his first meeting with President Carter, reaffirmed Tuesday his nation's willingness to press toward a Middle East peace settlement later this year, but only terms favorable to Israel. Only defensible borders between Israel and her Arab neighbors will be acceptable, Rabin told a news conference after his 2 days of talks here. And those borders in no way coincide with the boundaries at the beginning of the Six-Day War. Fake solutions would be unacceptable, Rabin told a crowd of American, English, American and Israeli reporters crammed into a reception room at Blair House, the official guest house across the street from the White House. We are talking about genuine peace. In almost every respect, the requirements for genuine peace that Rabin prescribed reflected bedrock Israeli positions that have been unchanged since the Six-Day War of 1967. They surprised nobody, all boundaries to be negotiated and defensible, no acceptance of US guarantees of security as a substitute for self-defense, no negotiation with Palestinians, except within the framework of Israeli talks with Jordan, emphasis supplied. In the late spring of 1977, a drastic change occurred in the political climate and power structure in Israel. To the surprise and shock of most observers, the Labour Party, which had dominated the government since the foundation of Israel, had been defeated by the militant Likud party headed by Menachem Begin. In July of 1977, Prime Minister Begin made his first official visit to Washington to meet President Carter. The meeting ended with broad smiles and optimistic remarks by both Begin and Carter, which surprised Carter aides, since they knew that little, if any, progress had been made. This was somewhat puzzling, since only a few weeks before, the White House had issued stern warnings to Begin that he must be more flexible in his upcoming meeting with Carter. Time magazine, in an article appearing in the August 1, 1977, edition.